first turnover of the game on that 24-second violation. There you see the little chess match that is wheelchair basketball and how hard it is to play defense. Great spinning move. But too late, and Bywater banks it in. It's 2-2. Pratt sets up one for Bywater.
B-neck.
Beautifully done.
I'm Derek Hoot, and welcome to the Push Podcast. Today, we're with Caitlin Eaton and Morgan Wood, and Caitlin is just coming off her bronze medal in Tokyo. They both represented Team USA at the World Championships in Hamburg in 2018, and Caitlin also played at the 2019 Pan American Games in Lima, Peru, and was assistant coach for the Illinois women's wheelchair basketball team. Morgan is a two-time collegiate national champion with the Lady Movin' Mavs at University of Texas Arlington. In this episode, we're diving into the details of allegations of emotional misconduct against their former USA coach, Trooper Johnson. And just as a quick disclaimer, the views expressed in this episode do not necessarily reflect the views of its creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Push Podcast. But today we're here because your former coach, Trooper Johnson, was rehired as the U.S. women's national team coach, and a social media campaign brought to light allegations of emotional misconduct that have been investigated multiple times, but not explicitly acted on by the National Wheelchair Basketball Association's High Performance Committee. After collective calls for Coach Johnson to step down, Johnson did resign, but continues to deny the allegations. And the NWBA hired coach Christina Rip Schwab, a former U.S. women's player and head coach of the UW-Whitewater women's wheelchair basketball team. So I want to start off with some history and background on the U.S. women's team's coaching situation for those not embedded in the wheelchair basketball community. After winning gold in Rio, Coach Steph Wheeler stepped down as head coach of the USA women's national team. And Trooper Johnson, a former U.S. men's player, was selected for the job. He had been involved in high-performance wheelchair basketball through Team USA since 1990, winning two bronze medals as a player. After retiring as a national team player in 2004, he continued to play and coach in the Bay Area. And in 2013, he served as assistant coach to the U.S. men's U23 and U.S. women's U21 for those junior Parapan games. Then in 2017, he replaced Steph Wheeler as U.S. women's national team coach. So the first question, during this off year, a number of veteran players, Becca Murray, Desi Miller, Gail Gang, Nash Schneider, Jen Poist, Christina Schwab, and Megan Blanc, all retired from the national team. Schneider ended up coming back for Tokyo, and Schwab came back as an assistant coach. And some stated that they had done everything they wanted to with the national team, or that they wanted to pursue other parts of their careers or their lives. But to your knowledge, were any of those veteran retirements related to the coaching change at all?
From my knowledge, all of them retired from 2016. All of them, I don't think, had any intentions of necessarily coming back. I know that Trooper Johnson reached out to Becca Murray and Natalie Schneider in 2019 and requested that he wanted them to come back. And so they decided to come out of retirement. I don't know if they had officially retired yet or not, but so they decided to come back for those years. Becca left again in 2020 when the Tokyo Games got postponed. And, you know, she told everybody that her reasonings were she was just ready to move on from basketball and didn't want to commit to another year and a half. As far as the other players, you know, Megan Blanc came back for another year as well, year and a half. She retired recently after Becca did in 2020. And Darlene Hunter actually came back from 2016 as well. She came back in 2019, but none of them left again or chose to come back. From my understanding, none of them said it was because of Trooper that they decided to retire in 2016. You know, I do know that he did reach out to Becca and Nat specifically asking them to come back, but when Becca left again, she did not say it was because of Trooper. So
as far as I know, yeah, I just agree with Caitlin. And then of course, Desi Miller did play for the 2017 team. You know, she's made her comments publicly, but I won't comment on what her reasoning was. I think I'll leave that up to her.
Then in 2018, just a year after Johnson was selected as coach, NWBA board became aware of, so this is before they officially received it, but they became aware of a letter from all 12 U.S. women's athletes alleging emotional misconduct. And according to NWBA Executive Director Will Waller, they began to create a feedback mechanism. So that included a survey and interviewing multiple athletes to learn about their experience under Coach Johnson. Now, I believe that letter called for the removal and replacement of Coach Johnson based on emotional misconduct. What specifically was said in that letter, and what were some of your experiences as players that got you to that point where you all thought an official letter like that was necessary? And if you can, try to be as chronological as possible from when Trooper became head coach to when the letter was sent and where this all stood in relation to the August 2018 World Championships in Hamburg.
Yeah, so I'll start and kind of give, you know, a chronological timeline of my experience with Trooper throughout that time. And, you know, reference the letter a bit. I think Morgan can speak more to the interviews as she was one of the athletes who was interviewed. So in 2017, I was only with Team USA for about, 5 to 6 months. I initially got cut in January of that year. So I was not with the team the majority of the year. I came back on maybe 6 months, probably not even 6 months. It was actually probably only 3 months prior to the team going to Colombia. So I'll say that I didn't have much experience with him throughout that season. In Colombia, you know, he already started showing some signs of emotional misconduct, screaming at players. You know, Mo can speak to her experience there, but I would say that she probably got quite a bit of it in 2017. You know, I was kind of the newbie on the team, and so I didn't get a whole lot. You know, specifically some of the things that he said to me constantly was that I was playing Illinois defense, and he wanted me to quit it and take that for what it is. But from my experience playing at Illinois, I would never consider Illinois defense to be a disadvantage to a team. And so, you know, that was my experience. Then I did get classed as a 1-5 in Colombia, which was a big shock, I think, to everybody, because we put my proposed classification in as a 2-0. And so when I got classed as a 1-5, he basically was over the moon excited about it and basically told me that had I not gotten classed as a 1-5, I probably wouldn't have been on Team USA going forward, which I thought was a weird thing to say to somebody based on a classification that I had no control over. So that was, you know, my experience in 2017. I think that in 2018, we chose to write that letter because prior to even going to Hamburg, we all received an email from him. And what I would reference was going to be a weight loss challenge that he put within in front of our team. He probably to this day would comment and say that that is absolutely not what it was going to be. But, you know, some examples from that email were that he specifically said that he wanted this team to treat our bodies like a race car and have no excess weight on them. And then the competition portion was we were going to be comparing our skin folds to each other, and the athlete with the biggest percentage lost and or gained with muscle mass would win a prize. So I'm not entirely sure how you interpret it to anything other than some sort of weight loss challenge, but you know, he's going to say his reasoning behind that, and I can say mine. But regardless, that was kind of the beginning, I think, in 2018 that made us all really, really question it, especially because we had minors on that team. We had a 14 and a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old actually at one point. And so for us to get that kind of competition was super concerning, especially with a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old on the team. That is not something that they should be concerned about at that kind of age. Going forward, we did send that email to the NWBA, and basically they slapped him on the wrist and said, like, clarify your language and let's move on from this. We even had a meeting with our athlete rep, who I'm not going to name because I don't want to get that person involved if they don't want to be. But we had a conversation with our athlete rep, and they thought that it was concerning. the language used in that email, but they said that we should take it to the NWBA and keep it internal as opposed to sending it to Safe Sport. And like I said, NWBA basically slapped him on the wrist and said, don't do that again. Once we got into, well, we went to the Netherlands first for a friendly competition, and then we went to Germany. And there, I think, you know, things just really got out of hand. It almost got to a point to where the girls were being pitted against each other, especially the captains versus the non-captains. The captains were having meetings with Trooper, and, you know, I can't speak to what was said in them, but then they were having to come back and try to tell us what was happening. And it just ended up not being good. But, you know, Trooper was hosting like video sessions where he was putting our missed shots on repeat and playing them over and over and over again. I think after all of that, just that's my story, and Mo will add to it. But I think as a team, we decided that this was not a productive or positive environment. You know, we were also very young, and I think we talked about that a lot, is like, are we just young and we're not used to the pressure? And I think, you know, ultimately we decided it had nothing to do with pressure. We didn't even really get to feel the pressure because there was so many other negative things happening at that tournament that we decided as a collective 12 to send a letter to the NWBA. Again, Mo will speak to the investigation portion of that. I was not involved. I was only involved in what they were going to do. They told us that they would interview, the email said 3 athletes, the town hall, they said they interviewed 4. So I don't know exactly who they interviewed or how many. And then after those interviews and after our surveys were sent out, they sent us an email back basically telling us to stop perpetuating a story that they found to not be true.
This was the NWBA sending that email?
Yeah, NWBA. And so that was basically the end of it. You know, we were basically told, like, you're not telling the truth. We investigated it, and that is it. And then they rehired him again for the 2019 through 2020 season.
Before we jump over to the investigation piece, and I'll hand that question over to Tinez, but before we jump to that part of it, is there anything you want to add to what Caitlin said already?
Yeah. So I know Caitlin wasn't there for all of the prep, I guess the whole entire time for 2017, but that's kind of where it started for me. Continuously, you know, I felt like I was being embarrassed for trying a lot of times. And I've mentioned this in a couple of different people that I've talked to, but my defining moment, I guess, of a red flag was in Colombia. We were playing and it was either the semifinal or the final game. And Trooper had, you know, brought me over to the sideline and just started screaming, which was fine. I think they scored a layup on me. You know, it happens. But not only did he scream at me, he kept me there in a very, you know, high intensity game against a different country. And he made the team play 4-on-5 while he screamed at me. And it wasn't like a minute. It wasn't like 2 minutes. It was like I was there for a while.
So you didn't get subbed out. You were just
sitting on the floor,
on the edge of the court.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure after he let me back in the game, he called the timeout and subbed me out for about 30 seconds. And then he yelled at me as soon as I got at the end of the bench and was like, why did you sub out of the game? And I was like, I have no idea, honestly. But that's where it started for me. I think he had a lot of expectations for me in the game. So did I at that point. But I think that a lot of times he expected people to be something that they weren't. Every girl on that team besides Desi Miller was new. Granted, I may have been in college. I may have won a couple national championships, but I'd never played on Team USA before. Never met any of the women I played against. It's not like I had a game plan, and nor did anybody else. And just to piggyback off Caitlin, that moved into 2018. Repetitiveness of failures were presented to us on film. And it wasn't like we were watching it one time. It was like 45 minutes of watching somebody miss a layup. And unfortunately, it wasn't just Caitlin. Other than that, I think, you know, there was a lot of pinning athletes against each other at the World Championships. I was a captain on the team. So a lot of times we were brought into captain's meetings where we would take problems that the team had brought to us to the coaches. Unfortunately, after we state the problem, that's the end of a discussion. After that, it was always him telling us, you know, a story or, you know, being like, you're going to have to keep these girls from doing this or doing that or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there was no solution. And I know Trooper has commented on that, that no one ever came to him. Unfortunately, me and the other captain, it was taken to Trooper. It was taken to the assistant coaches. It was taken back to the team. I specifically remember bringing it back to the team and everybody going basically apeshit at everyone, everyone against everyone at that point. And, you know, I don't hold that against anyone at this point, except Trooper, because there was never a time where we discussed that in a team meeting, where we discussed if anybody was having any problems, because majority of the time, no one was allowed to speak. You would get your, you know, 2 seconds in and then you were either getting yelled at or we were moving on. It was as simple as that. So moving on to the investigation. So we wrote the letter, what was it, October of 2018. And we did not hear back there for probably, I don't know, a couple weeks after that. And I received a personal email from two high performance committee members about wanting to do an interview regarding the allegations in the email. You know, Caitlin said that there were four people that did the interview. That's what NWBA said. And then there were three that we knew of. I only knew of two at that point. And then the NDA says something different. And then so does the survey. It says something completely different as well. So I don't know who did the interview besides myself. So I got an email with a non-disclosure agreement stating that I would not talk about the interview. So I can't talk about that today. But I can tell you that with the comments made in the forum, I do know that my question about the NDA wasn't answered. However, Will Waller was CC'd on the email. He does know about the NDA unless he just deleted it. And I'm not saying that he doesn't know anything about it. I'm just saying that, you know, that answer wasn't publicly answered. Doug Jones was not on the high performance committee. He has no clue. No offense. This has nothing to do with Doug. I'm not hating on Doug, but Doug does not know because Doug was not there. The two high performance committee members and Will Waller were the only ones on the NDA. However, I do know that in these interviews, not discussing what was in the interview, but me and someone else that did the interview, another athlete, we had different people in our interviews. We didn't have the same amount of people in our interviews. And two of mine were the assistant coaches. So I'm not sure what really that meant, but I do know once I signed that NDA, my mouth was closed. Because it did say that if I were to talk about what we discussed in the interview, my eligibility as a NWBA member could be at risk. So after that, my mouth was completely closed. There was no more bringing it up for me at that point. And just regarding my question in the forum, I asked, you know, during the allegations, why were the athletes asked to sign an NDA excluding people from Safe Sport and including assistant coaches? So what I meant by that was there was no one from Safe Sport in that interview, only two high performance committee, two assistant coaches. My questions are, why were assistant coaches in my NDA interview for abuse allegations about another coach? And also, I Safe Sport train every single year for being a coach and for being an athlete. And if the word abuse is brought up, there should have been someone from Safe Sport in that meeting. That was my intent with that question. But I don't know. I personally do not know if that interview was specifically because of the letter or if the interview was because of the surveys. Because as we also know, after every world championships or big event like that, world championships or Paralympics, they always send out a survey. And no one ever told us, you know, that the interviews were about the survey or were about the letter. So I can't tell you what it was about. But I do know that the NWBA has commented that there were no issues in the surveys. I know what I put in my survey because I still have it. And I also know that I know what the email says. I can make that public at any point in time. So I think it's a lot of confusion right now for us because we don't understand why new people are brought into the equation to solve all of these problems when they don't know what they're about at this point.
Does it concern you that the feedback process was created after the NWBA learned about the letter alleging misconduct?
I mean, yeah, of course that's concerning. We had to report and say that we were struggling and that, you know, we went through some pretty not great things. You know, I mean, I know within the NWBA members, there's some, you know, disagreements on if we should be using the word abuse or not. So we've been trying to stick with the safe sport words of emotional misconduct, you know, because that's how they describe it and what they do. And so we are sticking with the emotional misconduct. But for us to have to report emotional misconduct to the NWBA and then them randomly send us an email saying like, well, we're going to send you a survey, so fill that out. It's just like, were you going to always send us that survey? Did you just suddenly send us a survey because you're trying to now get individual feedback? You know, we did sign that letter as a team of 12, which we found in our heads, we thought that would be the most impactful. Instead of us writing each of our own individual letters, we wanted it to come from a collective group of us, of all 12 of us are saying this thing. This is our story as a team of 12. So for me, you know, it's questionable a little bit that they took that letter from the 12 of us signed collectively, and then they almost retroactively went back and said, but what do you actually think? Like, you as an individual, what's your real thoughts here? Or did you just like feel like you had to sign this letter because your teammates asked? You know, that's kind of my thought process on it. You know, NWBA obviously can come back and say they were always planning on sending that survey out and we beat them to it, which is also fine. But, you know, we didn't, I know for a fact that I worked on that letter for probably 3 weeks to a month after getting back from Germany. And so it is a little bit suspicious in my head that they didn't send out an email survey monkey for a month prior to them getting the letter. I mean, like, that's a quick link that you just created and could have been working on while we were in Germany. And so I don't know, you could say either way, but to me, it definitely looks a bit suspicious.
Yeah, I don't remember a survey going out after Columbia. So that's my only comment on that.
You've been listening to the Push Podcast, featuring my chat with Caitlin Eaton and Morgan Wood, players for the USA Women's Wheelchair Basketball Team. In this next section, we'll discuss what the NWBA can do to reinforce accountability in the future, the line between hard coaching and emotional misconduct, and the safe sport protocols that the NWBA adheres to. For more wheelchair basketball content, follow my Instagram at push_sports_mag.
Is it safe to say that there was never an instance where all 12 of the members of the U.S. women's team at that time met with the NWBA?
No, not all 12 of us got to speak to them. They selected whatever athletes they selected to do those interviews. They claimed it was based off of international experience, that they wanted somebody with a lot of international experience, mid-level experience, and then a lower level of experience. That was what they said in an initial email, was that it was 3 people. Obviously, in the town hall, they said they interviewed 4 people. But I know that I emailed CEO or executive director of the NWBA at the time requesting an interview, and I did not receive a response. So they interviewed 3, maybe 4 people on that team, and the rest of us did not receive that. And my request for an interview was ignored as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that's one of the things that Will Waller said in response to the town hall question: in hindsight, what do you wish the NWBA had done different, or how do you wish they managed the situation different? And he said, I wish we had talked to all 12. Mm-hmm.
In 2019, the NWBA partnered with the Center for Safe Sport, which is a third-party nonprofit dedicated to preventing the abuse of amateur athletes. So when more allegations against Coach Johnson appeared in 2020, the investigation went through Safe Sport protocols. Were either of you involved in that 2020 Safe Sport investigation? And to your knowledge, what does Safe Sport do to collect information?
Well, I'll say that from my understanding of the timeline, the Safe Sport report was not made until 2021. September of 2021. There were no other reports made to NWBA or Safe Sport between that 2018 letter and that 2021 Safe Sport report, just to make that very clear, because I know that people are asking about that. So technically, there were only two official reports by athletes made between 2017 and 2021. I want to clarify that, though, a bit. That does not mean that we stopped talking about it. I think as a group of athletes, we were very confused on what reporting processes there were for us. You know, every time I brought it up, it was like, oh, speak to your captains, or oh, speak to your assistant coaches, or, you know, here's your athlete rep, go to them. And so it's like, to me, when we go to those people, then they're claimed that they're not official reports. And so that is a bit confusing, because that's where you told us to go, but they're not official reports. And so then we don't know exactly where those are going, if it's just stopping there or if it's continuing down the train that it's like supposed to go down. I have no clue. As far as the Safe Sport report that was made, I can say that no, I was not a part of the reporting of that Safe Sport. I am involved in the investigation with Safe Sport, but I was not involved in the initial reporting of it.
I think the confusion there is that Tokyo 2020 or Tokyo 2021 is still being called Tokyo 2020, but I think the incident that occurred that launched that Safe Sport investigation, at least according to one of Trooper's Facebook posts subsequently, was that Courtney Ryan alleged that Trooper had blamed her for the semifinal loss in the Tokyo Paralympics. And so that would be September 21, 2021. And that would mean the investigation was launched in October 21. So that timeline makes sense. I think the fact that the Paralympic Games were called Tokyo 2020 might have confused some people, and that caused them to have questions in the chat at the NWBA town hall referring to 2020 allegations. But on December 7th, what set off this social media campaign and the situation that we're talking about now, Trooper Johnson was rehired as the U.S. women's team coach. And on the 7th, 8th, and 9th, the days after his rehiring, current as well as former members of the U.S. women's team took to Facebook and Instagram to express their disappointment, shock, and anger with Coach Johnson, the NWBA, and the High Performance Committee for ignoring their multiple allegations of misconduct and proceeding to rehire a coach that they did not want coaching them to Paris. Josie Aslickson wrote, quote, "I've had tough coaches, but none that mistreated my peers and I to this degree. None that dismissed female voices and destroyed the confidence of competent and talented athletes." Courtney Ryan wrote, quote, "I'm used to receiving constructive criticism from coaches. However, the negativity and personal attacks directed towards me from the head coach affected my confidence and my game at a time that I needed to be at my best." Did you, Caitlin Morgan, also feel that his coaching went beyond harsh criticism and into the realm of personal attacks? I know you've already talked a lot about that in some of your previous statements about film sessions and, you know, being pulled over to the sideline, taken out and forcing your team to play 5-on-4. But is there anything else you would potentially add to that?
I'd say for me, going from, you know, that 2018 season where, you know, it was definitely the worst experience I've ever had playing basketball, hands down. I think going forward, Trooper and I's relationship was quite different than I think Josie and Courtney experienced. Trooper and I just didn't have a relationship. We did not communicate. There was literally no discussions. There was no coaching. There was zero feedback. The feedback that I did receive to him, the only time he ever spoke to me was when he had something negative to say to me. I never received a, "Hey, you're doing really well. Hey, I appreciate you doing you know, that. Quite honestly, I wouldn't even say we had a relationship to where when he came into the gym, he'd say hi to me. So, you know, to me, that speaks a lot to the kind of coach that he is I understand from a coaching perspective that there's going to be athletes that you don't necessarily get along with, in the same way that when you have a job, there are going to be coworkers and bosses that you probably do not get along with. But at the end of the day, we're all professionals and we're all here to do one job, and you have to learn how to communicate with those people. And he was choosing not to learn how to do that with me. And, you know, I want to say that it wasn't like I was constantly, every time he said anything, looking back at him and saying, nope, don't agree with that. Like, you're wrong. I definitely tried to buy into his system, but I wasn't really allowed to do much. I never got an opportunity to play with the starting five. I never got an opportunity to climb my way back up in the roster positions. I was just considered to be our leader on our, you know, team that played against the starters. I mean, I basically was playing with anyone who was younger than 21 years old on my team, going against people like the likes of Natalie Schneider and Becca Murray and Rose Hollerman and Courtney Ryan. And so, you know, it wasn't easy by any means. You know, I'm a confident enough woman in my skills. And so, you know, I knew I was doing a good job, but at some point it starts to get to you that, you know, your head coach, this person that you're supposed to look up to, this person that's supposed to provide opportunities for you to show that you're working hard and trying to get to a point to where you can play, when he's just refusing to speak to you. And when he does, it's constantly not good things. You know, it really beats down on your confidence level. And so I can attest to the fact that Josie and Courtney are saying he created this atmosphere where girls' confidence were just, you know, going down. I had zero by the time I got to Tokyo. I wasn't playing. The only time I would go into games is when I needed to foul. I don't know if that's because he thought I was good at fouling or if he was just like, oh, she's fast, she can go in and at least catch somebody. He never told me. It wasn't like he was like, you're really good in this position, please go in. He was just like, squirrel, go in. You're doing that now. So, you know, by the end of it, it's just like, I really genuinely thought I was a very bad basketball player. Like, I have just gone down a very large decline from starting in 2017 and 2018 to I can't even potentially get court time into 2021. And so, you know, they hit the nail on the head. Is he created an atmosphere of negativity and a lack of confidence, I think.
Yeah. I just want to start out by saying Jason Nelms was my college coach. And if you think that someone can say something to you just so out of handle, I've played for hard coaches. I had a hard coach in college, one of the best coaches I've ever had in my life. I like hard. I want it to be hard for me or else I'm never going to get any better. But when you get to the point where you're like, why am I here? I got cut in 2019 and I hated basketball. I didn't even turn basketball on the TV until this year. That's not something that I do. But at the point I was at was, you know, it wasn't worth it for me to continuously, you know, be called names. You know, Trooper had names for everybody, you know, whether it was the other team or whether it was us, you know, whether he was calling somebody fat or whether he was just making fun of them just in general. That's Trooper. That's how it is. At some point, you know, I was like, we're human. Like, we're still people. You can't talk to people like that. And I think that it's very degrading when you have to sit through something as a woman of Trooper making fun of other women. You know, it's all fun and games when you're playing someone, you know, you got nicknames for all of them, but when it's absolutely disrespectful, I'm out. Like, I'm not doing that anymore. So that's why I didn't return. I'm not going to put myself through that again. So.
Yeah. I want to switch gears here. Thank you guys for sharing all those experiences. And I think some of that has to do with some of our later questions about kind of drawing the line between what hard coaching is and what strong coaching is. But I want to turn it over to Tinez to ask a couple questions about, you know, some of the actions you wish the NWBA took, as well as where you should draw that line between hard and strong coaching.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. Do you believe the NWBA should have waited for a response from Safe Sport before making a hiring decision?
Yeah, my thoughts behind that is absolutely they should have waited. I don't know of many organizations that continue with a hiring of somebody who's under any kind of investigation, whether it be what kind of investigation Trooper's under or any sort of other legal investigation that somebody can be involved in. Generally, organizations don't do that because of liability purposes. If that person is then found guilty of the allegations put against them, then the organization is liable for anything that has happened after the hiring. You know, we don't have competitions until this coming summer. And so we had time, I think, to wait on that hiring process. You know, I think the safe sport wording is you can't limit somebody opportunity in sport. And I think the NWBA is really, really holding on to that line. I don't think that them choosing to go a different direction and hire somebody else in that process is limiting him in any sort of participation within our sport. He is still coaching a juniors program. No one's attacking him in doing that. He was allowed to apply to be our head coach. I think that that 2018 team letter, I think other people who have stated to the NWBA, whether it was officially or unofficially, that they did not feel safe with this kind of coach, I think really takes away some of his qualifications, even though he's an intelligent basketball player and he's done a lot for the sport. I think that kind of decreases his value, that there are girls that just don't trust him. And so you're not limiting his participation in the sport by not hiring him. You gave him the opportunity to participate in that level of sport, and somebody just beat you to it, you know, is kind of how I view it. But they chose to go along with the hiring, and, you know, that was an unfortunate process because now we're here.
Yeah, I think, you know, the posting was out for like less than a week and he was rehired. You know, I don't know why we would have hired a coach that quickly anyways, if we were taking our time and trying to find the best fit. As far as the safe sport allegations go, obviously, if we all watch the forum and we all have seen the social media outburst, the NWBA did not have all of the evidence of what was happening. They wouldn't have known because no one put it out there. They didn't share it. Their new employees didn't have the information. The only people that had the information was Safe Sport. And the only reason partially that, you know, we went through this was because of social media. And no one knew before that because the NWBA, you know, former employees didn't share that with the new employees. That's why some of our questions cannot be answered at this time. So I think, yeah, it's interesting, in my opinion.
So on December 10th, about 3 days after a social media campaign supporting the USA women's team, Trooper resigned as head coach. That morning, he reposted a video from Instagram of speech to the Washington Capitals, a professional hockey team. It's admittedly profanity laced, and in Trooper's caption, he writes, "Better call Safe Sport." Now, obviously, that was an emotional post, you know, just having to resign and give up the position that, you know, he thought he deserved and worked hard for. But the implication is that high-performance sports and coaches demand a lot from athletes, and that blurs the line between high standards or hard coaching and abuse. And some would say this is just a part of a generational gap between players and coaches now. So during your experience, where do you draw that line, and how can coaches push their athletes to very high levels without causing any undue harm?
I think it's a great question. I think you're always going to have people on either side of that. It's a super gray area. You know, I think Mo and I have proven throughout our careers that we are accepting of hard coaching. You know, Steph Wheeler, who's an amazing coach, there are times where she has really high expectations. And if you aren't meeting those expectations, then she's going to yell at you. I mean, you can sit there and me and Steph can sit back and forth and we can talk about my final season as an athlete under her. And we had some pretty serious yelling matches with each other on the court because she had very high expectations for me and I wasn't meeting them. And Steph and I, to this day, have a wonderful relationship. She's one of my greatest mentors. And so, you know, I think I've proven myself that I can definitely take hard coaching. I think where the line is you have to show those athletes that you care about them, that I'm going to be hard on you, but I truly care about you as an individual. And I trust that you as a human have things that are going on besides basketball. And those might interfere with your basketball career at some point. I think that is where we all lost our trust with Trooper, is I can attest to the fact that there was not a single moment in my time with him that I felt like he cared about me as a person. An example of that is, you know, and I'm going to expose myself a bit here because everyone obviously saw his Facebook post defending himself, where he says that I did not do my reporting of my USA reporting over a year. He's wrong on the timeline for sure. I would say it was probably about 6 months. I struggled with reporting my workouts. I was very open with him that I was doing my workouts, but I was struggling with the reporting process of that. Part of that is 2020 was a rough year for me mentally, as I can assume it was for a lot of people. COVID did not help. But, you know, for me, I had just moved back to Texas for a year. I was dealing with a long-distance relationship. I had recently come out as gay. I had learned that both of my parents were having some health issues, and I was really struggling. And I sent Trooper multiple emails regarding all of those situations, actually all of them individually, because thank God they didn't all happen on the same day. But, you know, every time something new came up and I was struggling with that mentally, I would send him an email and he didn't respond to a single one. And so I think that speaks a bit to his character and how he treated his athletes, is he genuinely did not care what was going on in our lives. All he wanted to know was, are you doing your workouts? Are you getting better? This is for the team. Do it for the team. If you have other things going on, forget about it and do your workouts. And, you know, the fact that he couldn't even send me an email back saying, like, hope your mom is doing well, you know, really proud of you for, you know, coming out. That must have been really tough. You know, he showed no emotions towards me as a human, which then how do I trust him when he's constantly yelling at me? And then he comes back and says, well, it's because I care about you. It's because, you know you can do better. And it's like, you've not shown me once that you care about me. And so I think that's really where the line is drawn. If you can show your athletes that you care about them, then they're going to be more willing to take that kind of coaching technique. But if you show repeatedly that you do not care about your athletes, then you yelling at them is going to obviously turn into some sort of abuse. It's not you caring about them and having high expectations for them. It's just you don't think they're good enough to be on your team, is kind of how I view that.
Yeah, I agree. I promise you, Trooper Johnson cannot hold me to the standard that I hold for myself. That is one promise I will make. But I do know that, you know, this isn't a dictatorship. Trooper Johnson is not playing. His job is to make sure that we're a collective whole. And if we're looking at, you know, the past 4 years, was he successful in that? I coach girls now. The F word probably comes out of my mouth a whole lot more than it should. Sometimes I do have to call a timeout to absolutely bitch everyone on the team out. And I get it. I understand. But the difference is that, you know, it's okay to do those things, but you have to do it constructively. We're not just going to sit there and I'm not going to scream at my girls for, you know, 45 minutes and tell them they did that wrong. I'm going to have three girls walk out as soon as I do that. So it's really shocking that this hasn't happened sooner, in my opinion. I think that, you know, especially with the organization that I work with, there are very strict standards on the things that you can apply to your coaching. USA is a little bit different. Sometimes you have all adult women, so it's a different environment. But, you know, when you're bringing aspects from people's personal life and inserting that into your job, because Team USA was our job outside of our other 40 jobs that we're doing, college, work, you know, trying to survive because we don't get paid to do this and it's still our job, there has to be a line somewhere. And we as athletes expected that line to be drawn by the NWBA. There was no line. There's still not a line right now, unfortunately. So I think it's not where do we fix this? where should we have put the line? It's like, where, like, what line? You know, what are we doing moving forward? How are we making sure this doesn't happen again? And the way that we do that is really just having someone who has the respect for athletes to understand that this is not their only job. This is not the only thing that's in their mind 24/7 all the time. No matter if it was for me for 2 years, I get it. But, you know, other things are going on and you have to understand that.
Yeah. Thank you guys for sharing that. And I think, you know, like you said, it's important to think about who's in charge of drawing that line. You know, when should the NWBA step in? And those are questions that I think a lot of people have and a lot of people had during the town hall.
You've been listening to the Push Podcast, featuring my chat with Caitlin Eaton and Morgan Wood, players for the USA Women's Wheelchair Basketball Team. In this next section, we'll discuss ways to eliminate bias in the NWBA, the importance of transparency and reporting mechanisms, and what it meant to have Coach Steph Wheeler's support during December's social media campaign. For more wheelchair basketball content, follow my Instagram at push_sports_meg.
I do want to jump to some of Coach Johnson's comments. So 5 days after his resignation, he wrote a Facebook post defending himself from the allegations. And in this post, he claims that the most recent Safe Sport investigation, we talked about it a little bit already, revolves around that semifinal game of the Tokyo Paralympics and allegations from Courtney Ryan that he blamed her for the loss, which he denied. He also referenced Courtney's other complaints to the High Performance Committee, including in 2014 against Steph Wheeler, alleging a toxic environment, and 2019 against Miko Chambers, alleging she did not feel safe around her. So this raises a couple questions, and some of those questions were asked publicly. But number one, does it concern you that Trooper knows details and is disseminating information about complaints that are made in private to the High Performance Committee? And number two, how do you respond to counter allegations of your teammate being a serial reporter or the implication that these reports maybe shouldn't be taken as seriously?
Well, first of all, I think it is extremely concerning that Trooper knows details about those reports or lack of reports. I have no idea if Courtney reported, if she didn't, you know, I don't want to speak for her in any way. But even if she did make those reports, the fact that he knows details about them, I think speaks to the question that was asked in the forum of how does the NWBA deal with conflicts of interest? We all know that wheelchair basketball is a sport that secrets don't stay secrets for a very long time. You know, you see that in any sort of capacity, whether you're juniors, college, national team, just D3, you know, whatever league you're in, secrets don't stay secrets for long. And so the NWBA has to do a better job of when reports like that are made, that it doesn't turn into a rumor mill. You know, whether she made those reports or not, if she did, then she obviously had an experience that she felt like she did not feel safe. And you can't speak to Courtney's experiences. She experienced something the way that she felt she experienced it, and nobody can experience it the same way she did. And so, you know, reporting or not, like, he should not have that information, nor should he be allowed to post it publicly, because we're not talking about that. We're talking about his relationship with her. I was in Tokyo, obviously, during that whole time. You know, I can't necessarily speak to what he said to her or what he didn't. I was on the complete other side of the court, basically. You know, it was relatively loud. I have no clue what he said to her. She's got one story and he's got an entirely different one. And, you know, I wish I was in between them and I could tell you who was right, but I don't know. So, you know, as far as that report, I really have no clue. But, you know, I think Trooper's going to defend himself, and I don't necessarily blame him for defending himself. He's, again, you go back to the whole perspective thing. He's got one perspective and we have an entirely different perspective, and you can't necessarily fault either of us for having different perspectives. But, you know, he's going to defend himself, but I think he needs to defend himself based off the allegations that are made and not bring other things into this. Like, he's, from my interpretation of that post, is he was trying to drag all of our names through the mud to make it look like our reports are less than valuable. And that, to me, is not okay.
Yeah, I think that was a waste of energy for him, to be honest. I mean, as far as people knowing, I mean, I signed an NDA. So, I mean, legally, a lot of these things, I am concerned that people know. To be quite honest with you, I'm concerned that Will Waller even knows, because he wasn't in the interview. If he knows, I don't know. Who knows? I don't know at this point. But yeah, I'm concerned. After I signed a legally binding document, potentially I could get in trouble for and not even be able to be a part of the NWBA. It got out somehow. I don't know how, but it did. So it's concerning.
Yeah, in light of some of these events, a lot of people have pitched multiple potential actions, you know, to prevent future mismanagement. And during the recent town hall, someone familiar with events, I believe in Paralympic speed skating, suggested that the U.S. Paralympic Committee could take similar action and take over jurisdiction of the U.S. men's and women's wheelchair basketball teams from the NWBA's High Performance Committee. Executive Director Will Waller responded by saying the High Performance Committee is in lockstep with the USOPC and partners with them through everything from oversight to funding. But do either of you think the USOPC taking the reins would improve the oversight situation and help prevent future mismanagement? Or are there other steps you think could be taken?
I don't entirely know how that works in terms of, you know, what kind of oversight. I know USOPC does provide some oversight within our team, especially more recently. We've gotten plenty of resources from the USOPC. You know, our strength and conditioning coaches through USOPC, our nutritionist is through USOPC. Will Waller mentioned Katie Baker, who oversights our teams through USOPC. So I think there is some oversight already through USOPC that we have, and that's definitely very recent. We did not have that in 2018. Maybe we had like one person through USOPC oversighting us, but I couldn't tell you who they were. We definitely have more now. But I don't know what that would look like if USOPC took over as our governing body or anything like that while NWBA is fixing themselves internally. You know, I think that going forward, I don't really want to speak to making that drastic of a change, because I don't know what that even incorporates or looks like. But I think that it's really weird for me to say this, but I do trust that the NWBA wants to make changes. I don't think that they want to get into this situation again. I also don't even believe in that forum that they were trying to say that us athletes who spoke up were lying and that, you know, what we're saying isn't true. I genuinely think that they do want to make a difference and they want to make some changes. I just don't know if they're super ready to make the changes that are going to be necessary, because that would require them to take some accountability for allowing what has happened to happen. And that doesn't necessarily look great on them. So, you know, I don't know about any of that, but I do think, you know, next steps is we have to put something in place to make reports anonymous, or not even necessarily anonymous, but they need to not be able to get out into the rumor mill within wheelchair basketball. That needs to be investigated, and whether the investigation proves it to be correct, a correct report, or whether it proves it to be incorrect reporting, that does not need to get out to the entire membership. That needs to stay between the reporter and the person that they reported against. I think that there absolutely needs to be more oversight with the NWBA on these national teams, because there is a lot of pressure to win as USA athletes and a USA coach, and we got little to none NWBA oversight. I didn't even know that we had a panel of athlete reps that we could have gone to. I thought we had one athlete rep. I'd always been told one person's name, and so that was the only person I thought I could go to, but apparently there's like seven of them, and I didn't know that. So I think there needs to be more transparency on how athletes can go about reporting and who they're allowed to speak to, because I think you could ask all 11 other athletes on the Tokyo team and we'd all say the exact same thing. We have no clue. So there needs to be more transparency with that. And I think that NWBA needs to take into account when selecting a coach about how they get along with their athletes, that it doesn't have to just be about, you know, their basketball skills, what legacy they've left in the basketball community. You know, it has to come down to how they treat their athletes as well. And I definitely think that needs to be taken into consideration. So, you know, I trust that the NWBA is going to make these changes, but I just don't know how long it would take them to do it.
I just really have one comment on that. As far as them being hand in hand with the, you know, USOPC, if they were so hand in hand at the time that previous reports have been made, something would have been different. You know, apparently the ethics committee just started in 2019, supposedly. So my question really to that is, if you got these allegations and you have a partner who helps sponsor us, wouldn't they need to know about the allegations as well? Wouldn't they be involved in the hiring of a coach? Even if it's just, you know, these are what we have as our standards. Even if it's just that, not even involved directly with, you know, interviews and such. But I just think that there needs to be an outside party, because I'm not saying that, you know, that everyone from High Performance has told about what I signed an NDA about. But I am saying that this person's best friend is someone else on the board, and this person's best friend is an athlete. And if this is a business, it needs to be run like a business. Because in my business, we don't hire just because someone's this or that or this or that. And I'm not saying that they did that, but this is the NWBA in general. That's kind of how it works. We knew that coming in. So
it's so hard, because I think that it's awesome that we're all connected in some sort of way. Like, I can come to a Nationals and be like, oh, that was my teammate back in 2014. And now they're playing with this person who I knew through, you know, juniors or whatever it may be, that we're all somehow connected in this weird web. I think that's what draws people to wheelchair basketball a lot, is the community that you get by playing this sport. I mean, like, you and Martinez and Derek, I played with you guys in college, and now you guys are meeting Mo, who I played with on Team USA. I mean, like, this is all one really cool, like, big, happy family, essentially. But I think we don't do a good job as a sport to eliminate those biases to an extent. And so I think bringing more third party people into it to kind of call us on that would be extremely beneficial, of saying like, oh, did you, you know, do you believe that because you played with that person? Or do you believe that because you heard this from that person? Or, you know, do you believe that because you had a relationship with this person 6 years ago? You know, I mean, there are so many ways that people are interconnected in this sport, and you don't necessarily realize what your biases are towards those people. And so it's really hard to recognize those things. Like, I can sit here and say like, oh, I would never, you know, just protect Mo because I played with her for so many years. But who's to say that, right? Like,
you'd be the first one to hit me, probably.
You know, so I think third party people being in our committees or on our board, or even if they're just brought in when a situation like this arises, to be like, look, we need help with this situation. We're all way too involved. Could you please look at it from an outsider's perspective? Would eliminate a lot of those interconnected conflicts of interest.
Yeah. And as you guys said, you know, going into the next question, it's a tight-knit community, right? All the young ladies that spoke up received a lot of support. One of the biggest was from Steph Wheeler. The day before Trooper resigned, seeing it was taking days of social campaigning without response from the NWBA, Steph Wheeler stepped down from the NWBA board of directors in support of the U.S. Women's National Team. First, starting with you, Caitlin, as a former player and as her former assistant coach, what does that mean to you to have Steph in your corner, especially during these past few days?
Yeah, I think for me it means, you know, basically everything. Steph has not only been a coach to me, she's been, you know, essentially my boss. And now I think we've moved our relationship to friend, which, you know, so we've hit them almost all of them. And, you know, I've gone back and forth with her since 2013 about Trooper. Granted, from 2013 to 2016, I didn't have much involvement with him. So she's always been that person as my sounding board. You know, even times where I'm being overly dramatic, she can tell me that and be like, well, I think you look at it from a different perspective. But I think her resigning spoke volumes, because Steph has always been a huge proponent for lifting up female voices. And that was one of the reasons I know she joined the board back in 2019, was she wanted to really go in and make changes and do more for the female athlete and really female coaches within the NWBA. And for her to resign from a position where she potentially could have made some serious changes, you know, that speaks probably more than than our own personal stories, because this is a woman who has basically done anything with her career to lift up female athlete voices. And she's willing to put that in a way that almost lifts our voices up even more. And so I could not have asked for a better mentor or friend or coach throughout my time. And I definitely couldn't have asked for a more supportive human throughout this. Obviously, we've had wonderful support, not only just with Steph, you know, tons of we call them the OGs, but tons of support from former players as well. And, you know, they've been incredible and extremely supportive throughout this process. But yeah, I think Steph's resignation, I think kind of shocked people and really started to make them listen. So, you know, it was huge.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Steph's made a huge impact in my life, whether she knows it or not. She's been my most loved person in the world and my most hated at times. But, you know, back, you know, I tried out for the team for 10 years before I ever made a team. And I got cut in 2016. Man, did that make me hate Steph. But you want to know the first person who reached out to me was Steph. The first person, you know, when I ever started trying out was Steph. She's always been one to reach out, and not even for just me. I know multiple people who have Steph. Just her showing that support reassures me of the great human being that she just really is. And I think that it should open some eyes of some people in the NWBA, not just in the NWBA, but some of our supporters, some of our partners, you know, someone that important to this game, to this, you know, governing body, taking a stand for us. It means a lot, and it's very important. We couldn't do a lot of what we do without her, just in general.
And last question here. Speaking of female coaches, just a couple of days ago, Coach Christina Rip Schwab, former U.S. women's player, as well as head coach of the UW Whitewater women's wheelchair basketball team, was selected to replace Coach Johnson as U.S. women's coach. What are your hopes for your new coach? Obviously, you're both familiar with her. But what are your hopes for her as head coach?
You know, I got experience with her as another mentor, you know, another one of our OG women's basketball players that I think us younger ones kind of look up to. And so, you know, I think already that speaks a lot of, we get a coach that is an athlete that we were able to look up to throughout our younger careers. And that's somebody now that is going to get to coach us. And so that's extremely exciting, I think. I've seen Christina as a player, whether she was playing on Team USA or for the Milwaukee Bucks women's team. I've played against her. She's one heck of a player. She's super good. And she's, you know, got some skills that, you know, she can teach us a thing or two for sure. But I think overall, what I'm most excited about is Chris has been, you know, next to Steph, one of the people that have reached out to me when she's known that I've been going through rough times, or, you know, when I get cut from Team USA, she's one of the first people that I get a text from saying, like, keep your head up, like, you're going to get there, things like that. And so she's already created this trust with some of us athletes that she's going to care about us as people, but also make us really, really good athletes. And so, you know, I'm excited to, you know, potentially start playing for her. Obviously, we have to go through her trial processes and make that team. But, you know, even just getting the opportunity to share a court with her where we're not opponents and we get to be on the same team for once is going to be really cool, because I haven't had that opportunity with her yet. Only been opponents up to this point, whether playing or coaching against each other. So I'm excited to have her on my side of the court and to, you know, learn from, you know, one of the best class twos there is, two fives, I guess, out there. So,
yeah, my hope for Christina is always gold. you know, she's one of the most awesome women's coaches that we have, her and Steph for sure. And it's not just about, you know, her team for her. You know, anytime I competed against her team, she had comments for me, not bad ones, probably after the game maybe, but you know, she's been a good friend to me. I met her before I even really knew who she was, before she knew who I was. But honestly, I hope that she can lead and make USA what I always saw it as, what I saw it as when she, you know, was trying out. I hope that she makes the experience for the girls how Steph made the experience for the girls that were on Team USA. Not only do I want them to win gold, I want her to create an environment where, you know, this is top of the line. Again, this is a place where you want to be. You know, she's told me many times that at times it didn't even matter to me if I medaled. It was just the experience of being there and doing these things. And I hope she creates that for other athletes. I have no doubt that she will, but I want her to make, you know, the women's program a place where girls want to be, not where they're scared to be, because there's going to be a lot of younger girls coming up that she's going to have to get a handle on somehow. So I hope that she can blow the top off. I'm sure she can, but that's my hope for her.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Push Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Caitlin Eaton and Morgan Wood of the USA Women's Wheelchair Basketball Team. For more wheelchair basketball content, follow my Instagram at push_sports_meg. See you all next episode. Until then, keep pushing.